It has spread like wildfire. I don't mean it, the virus necessarily, but the effects of it. You know, 3 weeks ago, we were aware of the virus, but it was something that wasn't happening to us. 2 weeks ago, it hit home. We had our first death reported two Sundays ago. Since then, things have snowballed, as you all know. I debated whether to do an episode. There are no sports right now. In the last 48 hours alone, every major sports league has suspended operations or canceled their seasons, as is the case with the XFL. And we know also what's happened in the NCAA with not only March Madness being canceled. Surprising decision there. I thought postponed would be the way to go. But I suspect just logistically trying to do the tournament 2 months from now when kids aren't in school anymore, and all of the challenges associated with putting on an event like that, made it, just was a deal breaker when it came to that. But, I did decide to do an episode for a couple reasons. One, I put a poll on Twitter and 88% of you said you'd listen if I did it. And two, I got some time on my hands. any of you who listen know I'm in the hospitality business. I'm a bartender. I work for El Gaucho in Bellevue, Washington. And the hospitality industry has been hit extremely hard by work stoppages, major businesses in downtown metropolitan areas telling their employees to work from home, schools being canceled. Lives being affected, routines being changed. We thought we could hang in there. We made some pretty significant and serious cutbacks in staffing. It wasn't enough. And just got off a conference call with our CEO and going over the details of it all. And even he admitted that. He said, we didn't expect it to get as bad as it got or has gotten as quickly as it's happened. And I really feel for small business owners out there who most people think you own a restaurant, you own a cafe, you're rolling in money. Margins are incredibly thin. Even in prestigious, historically respected, high volume, high priced places like El Gaucho. Make no mistake about it, and it was discussed in the conference call today. If this thing somehow gets worse, and this six-week suspension of business that I'm subject to turns into 6 months, El Gaucho goes out of business. The famed El Gaucho restaurant. I hesitate to call them a chain, but we have five locations now. Would go out of business. There is not that amount of cash to support these businesses. And already we're seeing smaller businesses having to shut their doors for good. It's really unfortunate. And for any of you affected by it, either be through how it's affecting your employment, or if you or anyone in your family is affected by the virus itself, my heart goes out to you. And I just hope we can... I don't hope. I know. I know we'll get through this. I know I'll get through this. I mean, it sucks. It's tough. You know, December 1st, I started at El Gaucho and said on this podcast, it was my dream job. It's a place I've wanted to work for a long time. And it's a culmination of many, many years of reinventing myself professionally and working towards something and sometimes having to work through really, really shitty conditions to get there and achieved it. And the last 4 months have made some of the best money that I've made in my career. Now I'm out of work. So I want to do the podcast. How often will I do it? I don't know. A lot of that, the situation is so fluid. There has to be something to talk about, right? I want to do it for myself and also for you for supporting the podcast, being a loyal listener. And many of you are stuck at home too. I would imagine that streaming on Hulu and Netflix and online services is going to spike drastically, as is podcast listenerships. So, and we're coming off an episode 3 weeks ago, and I apologize for the delay, but you know, things are happening. Was a record-setting episode when I detailed my 2020 Seahawks offseason plan. By 20% more listens to that episode than any I've ever done. So I'm going to try to have as much fun as I can. And we may have a lot of football to talk about because the NFL has yet to push back the draft or the start of free agency, which is set to begin Monday with the legal tampering period opening up. So I thought what I would do today for a little fun, we did this last year. I don't have a script written out or even a rundown for today. Had one on Monday. Was going to talk in detail about the Mariners' infield as it projected to opening day, some of the young guys that were standing out, and some of the combine performers that stood out, but there is no baseball right now. So we're going to put that on hold for a little while. And I'm going to do a live mock draft. So what I'm going to do is open up the Draft Network mock draft machine. They're fantastic simulator. And we're going to do a mock Seahawks draft live as it's happening. So I don't know what players are going to be available. I don't know what picks we're going to make. I have a plan. I'll detail that plan beforehand, and then we'll just go through and kind of see what it looks like now that the comp picks have been announced and are official. We know the Seahawks have 8 picks in this year's draft, and we're going to talk some football because there isn't a heck of a lot else to talk about. And to talk about the real stuff sucks. And I don't ever want to make this podcast political. Obviously, it'll bleed in. But I want to try and give people a little bit of an escape. And so that's what we're going to do. So thank you for listening. It'll get a lot more fun, I promise. Let's do the whole intro thing. Make this thing sound as close to a regular episode as we can. So thank you for tuning into the Dan Cave today. Let's get this thing going.
Welcome to the Dan Cave. Here's your host, Dan Vies.
All right, everybody. So welcome back to the Dan Cave, episode 73, our live mock draft episode. If you recall, we did this last year. I really enjoy this. If you know me, if you've read any of my stuff on Seahawk Maven or 12th Man Rising before, or you've just listened to this podcast, you know I love my mock drafts. And every year, it seems the tools that you can use to do them just get better. 5 or 6 years ago, it was firstpick.com that was kind of at the forefront, and I would use them online. And the cool thing about them is they would offer trades, so it gave you the opportunity to trade down. Their trades weren't realistic, though, and they never matched the real trade value chart that the NFL kind of follows now, so that would get a little crazy. And then FanSpeak came along, and I like FanSpeak's interface. They would always make sure they got the projected comp picks for each team into their machine early in the process, even before they were officially released by the league. But again, their trades were unrealistic. You would get way too much for trading down. You could manipulate that a little bit by kind of playing around with some of the rules and offering future first-round picks and things like that in order to get a realistic trade done. But I never liked their big boards. Didn't think their player rankings were very realistic. Well, then the Draft Network came along last year. And they do as good a job. Well, let me rephrase that. They do a better job than anybody out there at prospect rankings and trying to get an accurate view of where guys are on the overall draft boards as far as how the league sees them. They have extensive write-ups on every player you can ever think of. And then they came out with a mock draft machine last year. It was great. The interface was great, and you got to use their big boards. So you got a better view, I think, a clearer view of how realistic it would be to expect that a certain prospect you like in the third round, for instance, was going to be there in the third round. But they didn't have trades available, and they didn't put the comp picks in. Well, this year, about 2 months ago, they added in the trade feature, and then now that the NFL has officially announced the comp picks, they're in there. So, just to recap, the Seahawks have 8 picks in this year's draft. They get an extra 3rd for Earl Thomas signing with the Ravens. They get an extra 4th for Justin Coleman, and then they got a 6th for Shamar Stephen signing with the Vikings. And so what I'm going to do is I've got it all queued up. I put all the settings and everything in. It's all queued up, ready to go. And we're just going to hit start. And it goes through pretty fast. And I'll talk through it as much as I can about kind of what I'm thinking for the next pick coming up. But when we're live and we're on the clock, we're going to make the pick right there, live, based on what's available to us. I want to set the stage, though, because the reality is that what we perceive today as Seahawk draft needs are going to change by the end of April, right? Because free agency is going to happen. It's slated to happen next week. As of now, the legal tampering period, it's silly that they call it that, but as of Monday, agents can communicate with teams and actually exchange offers and numbers. And then Wednesday is the first day that teams can officially sign free agents. But we all know what happens is agents and teams will come to agreement, especially on the upper tier free agents, on Monday, and those numbers will be leaked out, usually leaked out by the agents because they're trying to help their clients and they're trying to set the market, and so that that trickle-down effect will then get more money conceivably for their other clients. Now, on top of all that, just as an aside, we should find out early Monday or Sunday morning whether the new 10-year collective bargaining agreement, I always have a hard time with that word, so we're going to call it the CBA. The new 10-year proposed CBA is being voted on by players. The deadline for that vote is late Saturday. We should find out Sunday morning if it passes or fails. If it passes, it's going to be full speed ahead. Teams are going to know exactly how much salary cap space they have. They're going to know what the new cap is. They're going to know what parameters they're working under and how much money they're going to have available. It's going to be a free-for-all. So the question is, will any of this get pushed back because of this national emergency that we're in the midst of? As of this recording, it sounds as if the NFL is going to move forward as scheduled. I saw one report today from a national NFL reporter who said he spoke to somebody in the league office. And when that person was asked about whether they were thinking of delaying free agency, he said, "Are you crazy? There's no sports going on right now. We're going to get all the attention on our sport at this moment." And other than the fact that, agents in the league have been recommending that free agents don't fly to visit with teams because of the possibility, I suppose, of contracting the virus. That doesn't need to happen for these big-name free agents. The Giants don't have to meet Jadeveon Clowney face-to-face to interview him. They can do it over Skype if they want to, or they probably know enough about him at this point anyway. And so all these offers are made through text and phone calls anyway. So we're operating right now under the assumption that it's going to happen next week. Pete Carroll has made it very clear. He said at the combine, he used these exact words, that he wants a premier pass rusher to man the Leo spot. It's one of the anchor positions on his defense. It's something that's been lacking since Cliff Avril retired. Before him, it was Chris Clemens that held that spot. If Clowney isn't re-signed, and I talked on the last episode about how I kind of think he won't be because the number's going to be so astronomical. There's going to be such a good market for him out there. And B, I don't think he should be. To give Jadeveon Clowney $22, $23 million, while if it happens, I'll be happy to have him as a player, I think they can accomplish more if they don't re-sign him. But based on Carroll's comments, I'm going to assume that the Seahawks are going to be big players in the veteran free agency market. And while they may be looking at tier two, looking more at an older veteran like an Everson Griffin, who played for Pete Carroll at USC and was released recently by the Minnesota Vikings. In my offseason plan, I talked about signing Vic Beasley as a young guy who's fallen short of expectations in Atlanta with some upside, and then a couple of solid veterans around him, a guy like Carl Nassib, who was a draft pick of the Browns, most recently played with Tampa Bay. You can mix and match those names. Dante Fowler was thrown out today by Corbin Smith. Seahawks gave him the possibility. I mentioned Bruce Irvin. You know, I think they're going to bring in veterans who are motivated to chase a ring as a guy that could be a rotational pass rusher. So I think some of those pieces are going to be in place by the draft. And I think they're going to at least swing for the fences on one. And so in an attempt to try to be as realistic as possible about what they're looking for in this draft, knowing that this is a roster that if the offseason is executed properly enough, that the Seahawks could be in a position to challenge for the Super Bowl next year. But they got to do things right. You've heard me say it before. They got to nail this offseason. Simply going into the draft with 8 picks and hoping to hit a home run in the draft and draft a couple of rookies that can transform your pass rush, especially if Clowney were to walk, is a pipe dream. So, you've heard the reports of Yannick Ngakoue, who will be franchise tagged if he hasn't been already. Lots of news has been breaking today about teams tagging their players. Matt Judon was tagged by the Baltimore Ravens. He could also be a target of the Seahawks. But Ngakoue makes a ton of sense. And so I'm going to work this scenario under the assumption that the Seahawks make a trade for him. There's a report from Tony Pauline that the two teams have communicated, and there's enough detail in the report to lend it credence. And that detail suggests that the framework that has been discussed between the Seahawks and the Jaguars is Seattle would send their first pick, number 27 overall, and their second round pick, the first of two, their own native pick, not the Kansas City Chiefs pick that they got for Frank Clark. They would send their first second round pick to Jacksonville as well, but then Jacksonville would send back their two, which is higher. I think it's the 11th or 12th pick in the second round. So the Seahawks would move up in the second round, and they would get Ngakoue. Now, why do I think this is a good idea? Some of you may look at sack numbers and say that Ngakoue fell off last year, wasn't as productive. It's been reported in the last few weeks he played through a hamstring injury all year. The reality is this. He's 2 years younger than Jadeveon Clowney. He's been more durable than Clowney. Although I think the knock on Clowney from some people, especially Texans fans, that he's injury prone is unfair. I think he has as much, if not more, upside. Especially if you put him in the right situation, the right system. And he would conceivably cost $2 to $3 million less. Now he's in the last year of his deal, or he will be once he's tagged. Be the exact same situation that the Seahawks traded for last year when they acquired Clowney. But 2 years younger, could cost $2 to $3 million a year less. $2 to $3 million gets you a solid starter, role player, veteran, or a solid rotational backup. I mean, $2 to $3 million a year, that's a Bradley McDougald or an Ed Dixon. I know he hasn't played much because of injuries, but it shows you the kind of player you can get. DJ Fluker, starter at right guard. It's significant. It's a significant amount of money. You would also be saving money on what you're not paying a first-round pick. So there are a bunch of reasons that it would make sense to trade for Ngakoue. But the reason I did this is just to set the stage, because they're going to do something. Maybe it's just sit back and sign Griffin and sign Irvin and maybe a young guy that hasn't broken out yet. But for the purposes of this exercise, the Seahawks have acquired Yannick Ngakoue from Jacksonville for their first and second round pick, and they've moved up in the second round as a result. So, here we go. So I'm running the draft simulation, and we're already at the midpoint of the first round. All the expected names are flying off the board, and I'm already looking ahead. I have a couple of goals here at the end of the second round. I want to address another pass rusher, and I also want to address offensive line. Now, between the two twos and the third round pick, I'd like to address corner, but there aren't that many guys that fit the Seahawks system and their profile for a corner. So if one of those guys isn't there in the top three rounds, we may just have to go a different direction there. So we're sitting on the clock right now at pick 42. This is the pick we get from Jacksonville along with Ngakoue to move up in the second round. And these are some of the top players available. And this is where the intrigue really comes into play, because Jonathan Taylor, running back from Wisconsin, is on the board. And make all the jokes you want. J.K. Dobbins is also on the board from Ohio State. If one of these two top-tier running backs is on the board, the Seahawks are going to be really tempted. We know how important the running game is to them. We know that Chris Carson's in the last year of his deal, and he's never played 16 healthy games in his career. And we know that Rashard Penny is coming off ACL and isn't going to be ready or up to full speed until maybe halfway through the season. Travis Homer is a situational player. They've looked at Alex Collins. There are some other intriguing vets that have just hit the market. The Houston Texans are going to release Lamar Miller. He's coming off ACL, though. He might be an intriguing pickup. They're also going to release Carlos Hyde, who might fit as a veteran pickup as well. But with Carson in the last year of his deal and Penny's future uncertain because of injuries, don't be surprised if the Seahawks go running back at some point. Now, I'm not going to take a running back here, but I'm just trying to get you ready. If Jonathan Taylor and J.K. Dobbins are on the board, this pick could be a running back. It very well could be a running back. Now, when we look specifically at edge players, the top edge players on the board at this point are Curtis Weaver out of Boise State, who I've read in some places is an ideal system fit for Seattle. Julian Aquara from Notre Dame, who's listed in some places as an outside linebacker, but he profiles as a pass rushing edge. Daryl Taylor out of Tennessee, who I like, but this would be high for him. Josh Uche, who I think I had drafted in my offseason plan. And love this player. He's an outside linebacker, which the Seahawks have a need there. They could move on from KJ Wright and save $7 million this offseason. I expect them to do that. Had him doing that in my offseason plan. But Uche is such a unique player because he can cover backs and tight ends, and at times has covered wide receivers 30 yards down the field. He flashed that ability at the Senior Bowl and in practices there. But he's also extremely explosive, rushing the quarterback off the edge. Now, Draft Network has him rated as the 66th prospect overall. So there's a chance that he would slide to our pick at the end of the second round. Let's take a look at offensive tackle. There's some intriguing players left here as well. Prince Tagovailoa from Auburn. Isaiah Wilson from Georgia, who I really like. Matt Pert, really athletic, long 6'7 tackle from the University of Connecticut. Ezra Cleveland, who blew up the combine, really athletic tackle from Boise State, but there's some questions about his length. Some think that he's eventually going to slide into guard. Now, Winogo, Wilson, and Pert are all ranked 67th through 75th. Knowing the Seahawks history, how much they like unique players, go back to the Bruce Irvin pick in the first round. I'm going to go Uche here again. I just think he fits so perfectly, especially when you consider what the Seahawks have done hypothetically in free agency already. If they've picked up Ngakoue in a trade, and then if they add somebody like Griffin or a Fowler or a Beasley, more traditional ends, Uche is so versatile and so unique. He can help the pass rush in different ways, so I'm going to add him there. Now I'm going to go back to offensive tackle and see what's left, because we're on the board again at pick 64, the last pick in the second round. and Isaiah Wilson of Georgia is still there. What I see from Isaiah Wilson on tape, and we're talking about a massive right tackle, 6'7", 340. He's coming out after his redshirt sophomore year. He's a very, very young guy, moves extremely well for that size. I see the tenacity and the mindset of Jermaine Ifedi, but with much better feet, much better movement skills. There's one play I'm watching where he's backpedaling it was against LSU. And there was a blitz and they were getting to the quarterback. And so Wilson's running backwards because it's just a mess. The pocket's all falling apart. It's not his fault, but the pocket's just a mess. Fromm's about to get killed. And while he's moving almost at full speed, running back to the quarterback, he just reaches out with his left arm to punch an oncoming defender. And his punch was so strong, it knocked the guy off his feet. He's raw, but I think he has more upside than Ifedi and is a better technician and would be a long-term fix at right tackle. So I'm going to go Isaiah Wilson. So we've addressed, I think, two of the biggest needs this team has, helping the pass rush while also helping out in whether they play that base defense or whatever they choose to do with Uche because he's so versatile, and a starting caliber right tackle that can help you as a rookie. We've reached our one-third round pick, which is a compensation pick for Earl Thomas leaving. It's pick number 101. I want to look at corners, and it's bare. And this was the risk in not addressing it in the second round. Bryce Hall from Virginia would have been there in the second round. I think he's a great fit. I like Lamar Jackson as a potential fit out of Nebraska. He's more of a developmental guy, though, and he's rated 185th overall. He's got the length that the Seahawks need, so he's going to be available for a while. There's other needs here. If we look at the overall draft board, this is where I think the Seahawks are going to take a real strong look at skill positions. You've heard all about this wide receiver class. It's so deep that you can still get a really impactful player at this point in the draft. We're looking at Bryan Edwards out of South Carolina. Chase Claypool, the big athletic split or wide receiver out of Notre Dame, who really helped himself at the combine. Colin Johnson of Texas, another big receiver. Van Johnson, one of my favorites in this mock draft, is gone. And that's a real shame. And then you also have Michael Pittman. So a bunch of bigger receivers are available here. I'm actually going to take Bryan Edwards at this point. I think when you look at Edwards, he's 6'3", 215. He's a little bit better route runner than some of these other straight-up bigger guys like Claypool and Colin Johnson. Outstanding hands. Had some questionable quarterback play at times at South Carolina. Really, really outstanding all-around receiver that I think is advanced enough that he could help as a rookie. So just as we're working through the simulator now, just recapping the picks, Josh Uche and Isaiah Wilson in the second round, and Bryan Edwards, we've addressed receiver here in the third round. Now we have two picks in the fourth, and we're coming up on the next one. We're on the clock again at pick 133, and I want to look at the overall draft board, because I think this is where there are three places I want to look. At this point, if interior defensive line hasn't been addressed, then it gets really shallow at this point. And so we're going to stay away from that for now. I think that's something the Seahawks can address by, I believe they're going to keep Jaren Reed. That was part of my offseason plan. That Puna Ford, I think they're going to address it in free agency. And if there's one position that they've consistently shown that they've been really adept at filling those holes through veteran free agency, it's interior defensive line. So I'm not really going to worry about that position unless some value really falls to us later. So I'm going to look at coming back around to edge and adding another rusher with upside. And there are a couple, Alton Robinson out of Syracuse, Jabari Zuniga out of Florida. I'm just going to peek down and see if one of my other favorites is here. No. They had Alec Highsmith rated much higher than most other outlets. So he is no longer there. I'm going to take a peek at cornerback. Lamar Jackson's still there. This is where I'm going to look at running back as well. Anthony McFarland out of Maryland has some explosion. A.J. Dillon out of Boston College is one of the best runners through contact and after contact in college football. I'm going to look at interior offensive line as well. And a lot of my favorites are already gone there too. So I'm going to use this as an opportunity to take a really athletic tight end prospect out of Missouri. And I was just reading how to pronounce his name earlier today, but it's I wasn't expecting to take him in this draft, so I didn't practice. Here it is. Hold on. This is great live. Well, it's not live because you're listening to it recorded. But this is what live podcasting is like. I'm not going to clean up all this stuff. This is fun, isn't it? Because I do have the pronunciation guide here. And I want to get this right. Because if he's going to be a Seahawk, I got to learn how to pronounce his name, right? All right, here we go. It's Albert Okwuegbunam. He's an outstanding athlete. 6'5", 255 pounds. There were some questions about how sticky his hands were, but he had a really, really good combine, looked great in the gauntlet. He's had some injury issues, but he's got great length, great catch radius. And he's a solid enough blocker to think that there's something there and he might be more than just a one-trick pony. And even though the Seahawks have addressed tight end with Greg Olsen and they have Will Dissly coming back off of injury, Jacob Hollister is a free agent, as is Luke Wilson. They'd like to have Wilson back. They've stated on the record, not sure how they stand on Hollister. They had Jordan Reed in for a free agent visit this offseason. Obviously, they see it as a need. But I think they'd really like to add a guy with some upside. And we've done that here. And I better leave that open to that page because Okwuegbunam. Okay, got it. So we're at our next pick, pick number 144, our second fourth rounder. And I want to snap up because Alton Robinson's already gone. So I want to add one more young edge. So I'm going to take Jabari Zuniga out of Florida. He is 6'3", 253 pounds, really strong, explosive off the snap. He's moved all around the line for Florida, and he's one of those guys that he's all about projection. Like, he looks the part, looks great in the combine. The production's never really matched it. But you would think that Pete Carroll and the Seahawks could get something out of him, and he just adds another young guy to that line that could rotate in behind whoever they sign in free agency, and along with Rasheem Green and whatever they get out of LJ Collier this year as well. So we're at our fifth rounder, which is high in the fifth round. It's the pick we got from Pittsburgh for Nick Vanette. And this is where I think I'd really wanted to address running back here, but A.J. Dillon went right before we picked. LaMichael Perrine from Florida could be an option. There's a bunch of receivers left. We've already addressed that. There's Devin Asiasi I really like, and I think I had him in my offseason plan. We've already addressed tight end. Julian Blackman is an intriguing center out of Utah, but man, they've spent so many resources safety. They've spent so many resources on safety that I think they'll hold off there. A couple other intriguing receivers, but we've already taken one, and they're young there, and I do think they'll address receiver with at least one more veteran as well. And so I'm going to go interior offensive line. I'm going to take a really experienced center, Jake Hansen out of Oregon, 4-year starter, called all the signals on the line. A really smart, heady player, 6'5", 295. Sounds light for that frame, but when you look at him, he's built very similar to Justin Britt. He's really smooth, good quickness, good on the second level. As I said, real high football IQ. There's some questions about his lower half and his strength, but that's something that you know, a lot of these guys can improve when they get into a pro training program. He moves really well, and he would be a huge upgrade over Joey Hunt, and a guy that I think projects to be an average starting center in the NFL. And that's really good value to get in the fifth round. And he's a guy that's experienced enough playing at a high level in a big conference that he could be in the mix as a rookie. You can also play him at guard too. He's moved around a little bit and he has played guard. Now we're in this, we've got our sixth, our pick in the sixth round, pick number 214. We've added two players to the pass rush. One who also plays linebacker. We've addressed offensive tackle, wide receiver, tight end, and center. When you look right now at what's on the overall draft board, whole bunch of receivers still, so we could double dip there. Des Patman, go Cougs. He's a possibility there. This is where we want to look again at running back. But it's just a bunch of dudes. If we look at the corners again, sixth round, Seahawks, love their big corners, love their projects. They've said on record that they like Trey Flowers, see improvement from him coming in his third season, that he's the presumptive starter again alongside Shaq Griffin. I'm going to go with an interesting pick here, a little bit of a sleeper. Kendall Vildor out of Georgia Southern, small school player out of the Sun Belt, 5'10", 185. Seahawks don't draft small corners, right? Well, they have said on the record, and Jim Nagy, who used to scout for the Seahawks and now runs the Senior Bowl, has said that they would have discussions all the time about how, hey, a smaller corner's fine if he's slot specific. Kendall Vildor has 32-inch arms. I think he measured closer to 33-inch arms, which is what the Seahawks typically look for in their 6-foot-plus, 210-pound-plus outside corners. Kendall Vildor is a real interesting, intriguing a guy that could be in the slot mix and also serve as a developmental corner for the Seahawks there in the sixth round. And that wraps up our mock draft for the Seahawks because after the trade to Jacksonville to get Yannick Ngakoue, the Seahawks end up with just 7 draft picks. And so here is what we end up with. Our picks in the second round, Josh Uche out of Michigan helps your pass rush immediately as a situational guy, but he's also a guy that can play as an outside linebacker and coverbacks and tight ends. Isaiah Wilson can be your starting right tackle and a long-term fixture on the right side, even starting as a rookie. Bryan Edwards, outstanding all-around, bigger, really smooth, experienced receiver, holds all the records at South Carolina. Let's see if we can get this name right again. Albert Aquakabunam, tight end out of Missouri. Lots of upside there, a guy that can develop behind Greg Olsen and Disley. Jabari Zuniga, another guy who's raw, really good athlete on the edge, fits more of the prototypical Leo edge type for the Seahawks, but can also play some 5 technique. He's moved all around the line, can reduce inside as well. Jake Hansen, really experienced 4-year starter for Oregon at center. And could be a developmental center for the Seahawks, but also with his experience and playing in the Pac-12, could challenge as a rookie for playing time. And then Kendall Vildor out of Georgia Southern would be a developmental corner in the sixth round. Things I like about this draft, I love, the more I watch him, I love Isaiah Wilson as a rookie right tackle starter. I love, love, love Uche and would love to see what Carroll can do with him. I had hoped to get a higher end. I'd hoped to get a running back, but the good ones were gone. I felt like other needs needed to be addressed in the second and third round. I had hoped to get one of the more dynamic receivers, but there was a real run on them in this mock draft. So by pick 101, I thought Edwards was the best of the rest. If I could change anything, I may go running back with pick 133 instead of the tight end. And I had hoped to get one of the other edges that I like a little bit better than Zuniga at pick 144. I had hoped that Alton Robinson would fall to that point, or perhaps Alec Highsmith out of Charlotte, who I really like, and in just about every other mock draft I've done has lasted that long. But I think especially after a great combine, his stock is rising. And in many of the other drafts I'd done, I had a higher-end center too. If we had done this without the Ngakoue trade, I think we would have used one of those second-round picks on a center. I did a mock draft the other day. In fact, if you follow me on Twitter, I think I posted it, where I went Yetur Gross-Matos out of Penn State as an edge in the first round. And then in the second round, I double-dipped in the offensive line, got Matt Hennessy out of Temple, who some think is the best center in the draft, and then Isaiah Wilson as a right tackle. And then I kind of filled in from there. So let me know what you think. Hit me up on Twitter or go to my anchor page and leave a voicemail. Let me know what you like, what you don't like about this draft. And remember that it includes Ngakoue. Tell me what you think of that idea as well. And I will try to do more of these. Maybe we'll even do another live one as we get closer to the draft. We'll do one without the trade and see kind of what the difference looks in that. But certainly we'll wait a couple of weeks and we'll see how free agency frenzy progresses next week, if indeed everything goes as scheduled. Next week, like I said, hey, I'm at El Gaucho tonight and tomorrow night. If you're in the area in Bellevue, come see me, say hi, have a drink. I'll make you a great old fashioned, and we can talk some Seahawks. But after Saturday, I am going to be on a little bit of a sabbatical for 6 weeks. And so I'll be watching the free agent stuff closely. If it happens, there'll be a lot to talk about. I would anticipate, if there's any big news with the Seahawks next week, and I'm sure there will be, doing some quick hitters, some shorter episodes, and reacting to that news. I'll have all the time in the world to study that stuff. And so once free agency starts to clear up, regardless of what the Seahawks may do in kind of phase one of free agency, they like to play more in phase two and three after the top has been picked clean. Then we can start to do mock drafts, and our team needs are certainly going to shift based on what they've acquired in free agency. So, and I'll just finish with this. I got to meet John Schneider for the first time yesterday, and he actually told me yesterday that he thought the draft was going to be delayed. I certainly hope that's not true, because among the many silver linings and things I'm trying to focus on that are positive about being away from work for the next 6 weeks, one is that we plan to reopen on May 1st, and that would allow me to watch the NFL draft without any interruptions. Usually I have to work during the draft or take time away from work in order to watch it. So hopefully everything will stay on schedule. And when I asked him about free agency, he said, I hope they delay it. And I said, what, you just want more time to scout? And he kind of laughed and gave me that look like, hey, you get me. So I think it was wishful thinking on his part, because you know, a guy like Schneider, he loves the scouting process. He loves the evaluation process, and probably would prefer it if the draft was in June, because it would just give him even more time to crunch film and go over scenarios. So that was kind of cool. He was drinking Coors Light last night. Usually Manny's is his beer of choice, but he was there with his lovely wife, and they were actually, they were supposed to be there last night planning out their charity event that they hold at El Gaucho every May. I had heard erroneously yesterday that was canceled. Schneider himself told me they were still going to do it. They were just going to have to postpone it. And so really looking forward to that, working together with the Seahawks players and for such a great cause, and helping Ben's fund and children with autism and having some fun meeting some Seahawks. So Again, thank you so much for listening. I know there's so much going on, and there are bigger things to worry about than mock drafts and sports and football. But man, if you need an escape, I'm here for you, and I will do these episodes. I'll push through, and I'll find something to talk about, even if it ends up just being Seahawks-centric for the next month or so. I do want to touch next week, though, on the situation with the XFL. Really unfortunate that they had to end up canceling their whole season. I had hoped it wouldn't get serious enough that they'd have to do that, since they're on such you know, shaky ground being a new league and everything else. They sound confident they're going to be back for season two. Everything we had read leading up to this is that they were cash funded to be able to make it through the hard times for a couple of years, as opposed to some other startup leagues that have tried to make a go of it. So I'll talk a little bit more specifically. I had tickets to the game Sunday. I had bought a jersey this week, and I'm going to hang on to it. I had thought maybe I should just return it, but I'm going to hang on to it. I hope that they come back and play a season two, but we'll kind of wrap up their season next week as well. And then I think every day, every week that goes by, we'll get more clarification on how things are going. I just want to end with this. Whatever you're doing as you're out there listening to this, take care of yourself. Take care of your families. Wash your hands. Sneeze into your arm. Don't shake hands for a while. But please, let's not make this a habit. And what I mean by that is social distancing. Let's get through this. These are hard choices. I spent the first part of the week freaking out about this, and woe is me, and why is this happening to me? This is the right thing to do. If this accomplishes its intended result, which is to slow this virus down and slow these infections down and save people, it will flatten the curve, as the experts say, and it will wash out of our area and ideally out of our country and our society and our communities quicker. And so let's just stop complaining about it, and let's stop politicizing it, and let's stop bitching about how inconvenient it is. Or, you know, there are people out there that think this is all BS and it's all a hoax and it's all a media creation, and maybe just keep that to yourself. Believe what you want to believe, but maybe just take care of yourself, find something productive to do with your downtime. And I know my yard's going to look great, and I'm going to get in shape. no more excuses. You know, no more, oh, I got to go to work today. I got to take care of myself. Got to rest up for work. You know, I'm going to bust some ass and get in shape, take care of some projects around the house, help out Erica around here, and take care of Allie, because you've heard me say it before on the show. One of our dogs is really struggling with cancer, and she's had some really rough days recently, and I get to be home with her every day and take care of her and nurse her and baby her, and she doesn't have to be alone for the next 6 weeks, or for as long as we get, to be blessed with her presence. So, be good to each other, be good to yourselves. Good journey song, by the way. Maybe listen to it. And if you get a chance to tune in, I'll try to keep you up abreast of things that are going on and kind of give you my take on what there is to give takes about in sports these days. So thanks for listening. I know there's a lot going on, and we'll see you next week on the Dan Cave.